Welcome to the Elementary Librarian Podcast, where we discuss simple tips and tricks to help you take your school library to the next level. And now your host, Jocelyn Sam.
Welcome, Elementary Librarian listeners. Today, I'm so excited to have on the show Ms. Melanie Stewart, and she's going to talk to us today about a different approach to library centers or library stations. As you know, I am a huge fan of library centers, and I talk about them quite frequently on my website. On the show notes today, I will link to several articles that I have written on my blog, elementarylibrarian.com, about library centers and also some other resources for you. Welcome, Melanie. I'm very glad to have you today.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, first of all, before we get started into centers, because like I said, I'm kind of obsessed with library centers, library stations. Mm-hmm. People call them different names interchangeably. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you at? How long have you been a librarian? Anything else that you'd like to share with the listeners?
Okay, well, I'm in Darlington, South Carolina. I work for two schools there. Washington Street Elementary, which is a 4K through 3rd grade, and West Hartsville Elementary, which is a 4th and 5th grade. And I go back and forth between the two schools. I spend half the time Monday through Wednesday at Washington Street and Thursday and Friday at West Hartsville. I've been a librarian for 6 years, I believe. And before that, I taught English. I taught 7th grade English. And the reason I went into libraries because, well, the librarian at my middle school kind of taught me into it because he noticed I was quite proficient with the library. And when I was teaching English, I noticed that the kids would come in and they didn't have a love for reading. It started getting progressively worse each year as far as the reading levels, the skills, everything. And I said, well, maybe they need someone in their lives to introduce them earlier on to some great books and literature and actually read stories and read them in an interesting way. And everyone told me I was quite the actress when I was reading stories. So when Mr. Otterback said that he was retiring, he talked me into going into to the MLIS program here at USC. So I did that, and I got my degree, but I never worked for the middle school. I started off at the elementary school because that was the first job that was offered, and here I am working at the elementary school.
Yeah, it's kind of a different world, I would say, than the middle school.
Yes, it is. There's a lot going on. There's a lot to learn.
Yeah, I've worked at all levels of schools. Well, I've only been a librarian in elementaries, but I've worked in K through 12 in other roles, and it's always interesting to see the different. I don't know. I guess just how different the different ages are. But you know, I really enjoyed all of the different ages that I've worked with.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I love the seventh graders, but like I said, they started changing as the years progressed, and I was like, there has to be some way to catch these kids early on.
Exactly, and that's what we're here for in the library, just to try to push that love of reading. And so I'm so glad that that's worked out for you. Well, let's talk a little bit about why did you start using library centers or library stations? Is there a particular reason why you started or is something that pushed you to do so?
Well, yeah. Before I started using library stations, I used to do like a general lesson for the kids. My upper elementary kids, 3rd through 5th grade, I would teach a lesson like I do something on idioms or, you know, some other thing. I'd have a PowerPoint to go with the lesson, and it'd be interactive, and I'd do like an activity sheet, and I'd show a video clip to go along with the lesson, like the idiom, the cartoon, it's called the Symphony of, I forgot the name of it, it's a Looney Tunes cartoon that shows a lot of idioms, so I'd use that if I was doing the idioms or some other video clip, and then I dismissed the kids to go to the computers and do some research while I did the checkout. So anyway, so our state switched over to Common Core, and I know you're familiar with that.
Oh yeah.
So our district became they start making all these shifts to try to get ready for the full immersion in 2 years. So, and that was last year. So my district media coordinator, who is also the Title I coordinator, and she has a lot of other hats, she came and she observed me earlier in the year. And then later on, she asked me to pilot a program where I would use workstations in the media center, and just to introduce the other media specialists. We have 23 schools in my district. So she wanted me to introduce the other media specialists to the concept and to show other teachers how that would work within the classroom. So I immersed myself into it, I jumped into it, and I thank God for your website and other websites where I got a lot of ideas. I found different themes, and that during that time when she asked me, it happened to be just before Dr. King's birthday. So I started immediately making centers for Dr. King's birthday, just focusing on Dr. King and his contributions. And I had someone on Teacher Pay Teacher had an egg experiment, a brown egg and a white egg, and I did that with the kids. They loved it. Had a couple of board games that I got off of Laura Chandler's website, with Laura Chandler. I'm not sure.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, she has a verb past tense board game, and I used past tense words from articles about Dr. King, and the kids loved that. And then I had computers with videos with Dr. King doing a speech, and then they did some scavenger hunt research on Dr. King. So it was quite comprehensive. I had to do it really fast and quick, and I really had to jump into it at that time. But over the past year, I really learned how to work with media workstations very proficiently. At first, I used to have an hour to do it with the fourth and fifth grade because we had hour-long classes. But this year, we have 35-minute classes 2 times a week. So I had to learn to divide the workstations up so that the kids would get to each workstation. I have 6 workstations. So they would do 3 on one day and 3 the next day. And at first it was kind of difficult because they had to remember. I had to try to think. I was trying to devise a way to remember myself where each group was last. But I said, this is crazy. I want your group to remember where you were last so we can move into the next station. So
right.
That's some of the pressure off of me. But, yeah, so I've been doing this. I'm very meticulous. I'm very detail-oriented. I'm a control freak. I'm all that stuff. So
I understand that. I'm right there with you.
Yeah. So anyway, so I developed a couple of forms to help me with my organization. And one is my media workstation assignment form. And it was just a half sheet of paper. And I put it on Teacher Pay Teacher. And it has the group name, the different jobs of each member of the group, and that's what I had the kids. Oh, and it also has a place for their computer number for video computers and computer number for research computers. So I had the kids do all that. That was our first day of doing that. They had to fill out that form. I assigned them computers, specific computers, and assigned them a specific group. And for each group, I chose a captain, a student that was very reliable, a student I could trust, a student that wouldn't let other students get away with anything. And that was the captain of that group. And then the captain and the group decided who the other group members were, like the organizer and the motivator. I don't know if I'm telling all this right. I'm trying to explain it all. I feel like I'm rushing.
No, that makes sense. And so you're saying basically you created a form that sort of keeps the groups on target.
Right, yeah. So they'll know what their jobs are and where they're supposed to be, what specific computer they're supposed to be going to for the computer activities. And so they'll know what group they're with and who the group members are in that group.
Right, and that makes sense. I like that idea. Mm-hmm. I think everybody does it a little bit differently. Yeah. For me, I always kept mine on an Excel spreadsheet, and mm-hmm. so I would keep the names always the same for each class, like they would always be in the same group, mm-hmm. but I would just change the station. You know, I would move it over each week, mm-hmm. and then I would just save it each time so I could remember where they had been, because I only see my students once a week,
mm-hmm.
and so it's hard for them to remember sometimes, and it's really hard for me to remember.
Right,
so.
Right. I'm telling you, really.
Yeah.
That's smart.
So that's how I kept mine. You know, I kept mine electronically. But I like your idea, too, because that gives it more of the student's responsibility.
Right. And being between two schools, I seem to have to juggle so many things. I just wanted to put something on there. just remember where you were last time, please. That's all.
Exactly. Yeah. You think kids could do that. Sometimes they can, and then sometimes
yeah.
they can't.
Right. I know.
So you mentioned before that you had hour-long classes at one time, mm-hmm. and then you had moved to 35 minutes, and I've actually been there before, too,
mm-hmm.
Although my experience was at two different schools. My first school, I had an hour with each group, which is actually a really long time,
yeah.
and then at my latest school, we have 35 minutes, and so... You know, that's a big difference there, and especially if you have to smash checkout in there, too. I know that I have a lot of people out there going, oh, there's no way that I can do these stations.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that I have always done it, well, at my latest school with the 35-minute classes, is that I rotate a station per week.
Mm-hmm.
So you're at the same station for the full 35 minutes, and then the next week you go to the next station. So we will do, like, three stations a month is how I've usually done it.
Yeah, I was reading that on your website, and I thought that was interesting. But I do 10 minutes per station. They rotate, and they do it themselves. They set the timer for me. I have a student that sets the timer on the, I have a computer at the front that's connected to a projector and has one of those Vicki Blackwell's class timer. So they set that for me for 10 minutes, and as soon as it rings, they reset it again. And they love that rotation. It helps the kids who are the kids that like to roam. It helps
yes.
keep them, you know, I guess it involves their kinesthetics, whatever, you know, whatever that is. That
yes, yes.
They have to have that movement going on. So we, for instance, if they're at the video computers, whatever video we have, like if I had Dr. King's speech, it wouldn't be more than 10 minutes, and they'd have to take notes. I have note-taking forms that I made up that where they just, you know, take notes about new ideas that they see from the video and whatever kind of was an aha moment for them. So that takes about 10 minutes. Then they move on to the... scavenger hunt computer where they do an internet scavenger hunt. Usually I get something offline. Thank goodness that other people had created some wonderful materials for me. And then from that station, they move on to the checkout station where they're right there. There's a lot of books in that area. They can pull books from the shelf. When I call them, I say, go ahead and check out. So they go check out, and they have their 10 minutes to really peruse. And then we have table task one, which is an activity like some sort of experiment. Table task two is maybe a hands-on game. And then the IR, independent reading table, is a table where I have book report forms, which I have to change every week just to keep them interested. And it's a basket of books that are theme-based. So all my Dr. King books or all my Black History books would be in that basket, and they'd have to get a book and read it real quick and do the form. And I do grade the papers. Some people ask me, do I just let the kids do that and just throw them? No, I don't throw them away. I tell the kids that those papers are graded, and I give them to the teacher whose subject level they connect with. So if we did idioms, I give it to their language arts teacher. If we did, you know, Black History, I give it to their social studies teacher. So they actually do get grades for whatever work they do in the library.
Yeah, that's interesting. That is a good thought, because a lot of people, like myself included, we don't are not quite required to give grades, and so that's the thing. It's like, what do you do with the work, and when do you have time to grade it? Especially if you don't have an assistant and you're going to two different schools.
Right.
I mean, that's kind
of
rough.
That's where some of my I have one great student who's everybody's mama. That's what I call her. She's everybody's mama, and she knows exactly what to do. And she helps me grade those papers. I give her the answer key. And I say, if they don't have a name on it, throw it away. Put it in file 13, because that's one of my rigid rules. I want you to put your name on your paper. How am I going to tell whose paper it is? You know.
Right.
So,
I like that idea of enlisting some student help, because it's pretty much impossible to do everything on your own.
Right.
I know.
Right.
So. Okay. Well, I think that's a great start of telling us sort of how you organize.
Mm-hmm.
So you say that you do, is it like six a month or six a week?
Six a week. And thank goodness Black History Month is about a month long, but I have to change just to keep them interested. For instance, if I start off with Dr. King, the next week I might go to George Washington Carver, and then Harriet Tubman, and you know, some different focal point, Harlem Renaissance, and thank goodness we have Brain Pop Junior, Brain Pop, those things that brings the videos in. They have different resources that you can download, different activities also. So those sites really help me to devise my centers. And also, I have a bonus table. I forgot I have a bonus center, so sometimes I do have seven centers going on. Sometimes the language arts teacher or the social studies teacher will come to me and say, well, I'm working on author's purpose or something like that. So I just I make an extra table, and I pull up an internet site like it's called Reading Comprehension. It's a site that has interactive author's purpose, reading and language arts and social studies type, not games, but they're actually lessons, and the kids interact with answering the questions. So I pull up something like that, or I pull a PowerPoint up, and the kids interact with the PowerPoint specifically for whatever the teacher is focusing on in that class.
So it seems like that you do some collaboration also with your teachers.
Not as much as I would want to, but, they do come to me when they have something that they're really working on.
And that's good. I like having that kind of relationship, even though it is oftentimes informal collaboration. That's usually the times that I've collaborated with people most. They've just said, hey, Jocelyn, I'm working on poetry. Can you reinforce this in the library, and I usually will try to do that for them.
Right. Yeah. And I think let me go backtrack a little bit. I wanted to tell about the videos that I get. I wanted to thank United Streaming for their videos that they've given us, and I download video clips from there, and I also download from YouTube. And I really, on Sundays, I take Sunday. That's my day to peruse the videos on YouTube. If I'm doing a certain theme, I go through all the videos on YouTube, and I really go through them, because sometimes the video, they can add something on the end, or, you know, it's just not good. So I download them on my Real Player, in my Real Player Cloud, and I use it from that point.
Yeah, I also love United Streaming. There is some really incredible stuff on there. The state of Kentucky, I'm not sure if it's like that in all states, but the state of Kentucky, everyone has access to United Streaming and the United Streaming account.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and you can even look things up by standard and show it by the standard. It is really amazing.
Yeah.
I like the Weston Wood stories on there, a lot of the Reading Rainbow kind of stories. Sometimes I will show those to my younger students.
Yeah.
I really, really love United Streaming. So.
Yeah, I love it too.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. Give us some other examples of some centers or stations that you use in your library. You've talked about, you know, the Dr. King centers, and you had them watch the speech, and that you had some independent reading centers with the theme. What are some other ideas that you can give to the librarians out there, some practical things that maybe they could implement in their libraries?
Well, I try to think of a theme that will interest the kids, like around October I did Unsolved Mysteries, and that includes Bigfoot and ghosts and Loch Ness Monster and all that, all those things. Wow, the kids went wild. They loved it. In fact, they were so scared of some of the ghost stories that I pulled up that they were backing up from the computer and screaming, and, you know, I said, oh, I don't want to read this, but they were compelled to read it anyway. I think that sitting there and trying to find the right theme, sitting down and trying to find the right theme is the key to having a great center. For instance, when I went into the Unsolved Mysteries, I went through all the websites that I could find. I put, in the search engine, I put Unsolved Mysteries for Kids, and you should see all the stuff that comes up. All kinds of videos. We did research. There's a couple of Unsolved Mystery web quests that I printed out on the internet and had the kids research those. I did mapping skills. One of the tables I had was mapping skills. They had to, I made a list of unsolved mysteries and where they were located, and I gave the kids a map, so they had to actually map or kind of put a put a dot where the unsolved mystery was located and put the name of the mystery, or we got the lizard man down here in Bishopville, South Carolina, so I had them put a dot near Bishopville in South Carolina and put Lizard Man on the map.
Yeah, I like that idea. That's a practical application of something,
right?
That I think that using maps and things like that have sort of, I don't know, I won't say lost their importance, but it just has, people don't do that anymore, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something, a skill that they need to know, but it's done in a fun way. And so I liked the way that you've done that.
Well, thank you. And I had them create a creature, make their own creature. They had to actually use some dice, and they had to use a paper where they had to roll for the creature's head and body and hands and tail, and it would say your creature has the head of a buffalo if you roll like a number one on the dice. If you roll a number two, you might have the head of a snake, or so after they rolled for each student rolled, took turns rolling the dice, and for each body part, then they had to draw their creature, and they had to tell what, I don't want to say skills, but what the creature does, what sets the creature apart. And so they love that. Of course, IR, now that when I did the IR reading station, independent reading, I pulled up newspaper articles. I just pulled some off the internet. I saved some, like, from those tabloid magazines about mysterious creatures that were found. And the kids read those, and then they had to do one of those little book report forms on it. And they loved that, too. And they were like, do you believe Bigfoot is real? Do you believe this creature is real? Here are the facts. And they'd outline the facts to me from what they read.
I don't know. My students always love those books, the
mm-hmm.
ones about, Bigfoot and Loch Ness Monster, aliens, UFOs.
I mean, in the library again.
Yeah, they love them.
Yep.
So that's a really creative idea. You know, some things that I haven't thought of. So mm-hmm. I like that.
Well, thank you. But anyway, we stayed on Unsolved Mysteries for about a month, the whole month of October, and every week it was something different because there's a lot of unsolved mysteries out there. And so by the end, the kids are like, we're leaving this? Can't we go back to Unsolved Mysteries? And every now and then they'll ask me, well, if they have time, if they're early finisher, they'll ask me, well, can I watch a video clip on Bigfoot or whatever, you know? And I say, okay, sure. Done ancient Egypt, had them have a Lego pyramid. I had them build a Lego pyramid. Had them do some of the mummification process with ancient Egypt using a piece of fruit and an apple. And they just did the basic process. And it dried a little bit before we finished the unit, but it didn't really get, you know, mummified like I wanted it to. Just activities like that. They love hands-on activities. They love to actually create things.
Yeah, that is that's really cool. I think I would love to go to the library where you made a mummy.
I wish it were, I actually had some people have used chicken, but I didn't want to try that in the library. I didn't want to smell it or whatever, so I just used pieces of apple just in the way it's apple. And we actually had cinnamon and spices, and you know, they had to rub the body down with vinegar, and you know. So they loved that. They had to watch the video first, and then they had to actually produce the.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's something I never would have thought of. So that's why I love to do this podcast, because it gives people such different ideas that maybe you wouldn't have considered on your own. So, yeah, that is great. Let's talk some more about, you mentioned some of this earlier, some station organization tips, because I know I have a lot of people out there that are probably saying, you know, I just don't know if I can do this station thing. I've got so much going on. I don't know if I have time to prepare all the materials, things of that nature. So you mentioned two ideas already. You mentioned that you had a media workstations assignment form, and I will do a link to that on the show notes for everyone. And then you said also that you have a student work grader, and I thought that was a good idea also. And so what other ideas can you share with the audience regarding organization of stations or centers?
Well, I have a media center grouping form that I put on Teachers Pay Teachers also. It's just a sheet where you just take each class and you group them in groups of five or six. I try to keep my groups at least four or five. I don't like having too many kids at each center. And you just write it out. You write out your groups, and you write. That's where you note who your captains are, and you take a note on who your students have chosen for their organizer and motivator, and you know, you just make sure you have that all noted. Kids like to change; they fall out and everything occasionally with each other in groups. So I try to keep it in pencil, because sometimes, you know, and even though I try to make the kids stay with the group that they're with, because I conscientiously put them with the people that I think will help them and help them grow.
Oh, yes.
but of course, sometimes they come to an impasse and they can't work together. So I just pencil the name in, and then, you know, I change it up. And sometimes I have created a whole separate group for some students that just can't seem to get along with anybody. And, in fact, I have one class where I have just two students in the group by themselves, because they can't seem to get along with their fellow students. So and that's the form I do that on. Also, as far as time, I have on Wednesdays, it's my easy day, I have 4K in the morning, and then in the afternoon I don't have any more classes. That's my preparation day. It's my flex day. And so that's when I really start preparing. I start making my copies, and I put all the centers together and just get all the activities set up at my first school. And then that afternoon after I leave that school, I go straight to the other school, which is not too far, and I actually put everything where it's supposed to be. So it's extra time, but it's well worth it, because I have classes starting at 8 in the morning. I won't have time when I get there to jump on there and try to set up everything. So thank goodness I had that extra time during that day. And I guess you could ask your principal. see if your principal will work with you, let them know what you're going to do, let them know the benefits of having workstations and that the kids will be involved and that they'll have their all their multiple intelligence things so that you'll be focused on all those things where they're involved and active and interactive and, you know, and now that will probably influence them because Common Core is about interaction and working and collaborating with each other as students and, you know, so that I think that will help influence them to help you out a little bit. It's impossible to plan all of these stations without any time.
Exactly, and that's why I've spent so much time on my website just developing resources for librarians because I know what it's like to not have much time to do anything. And so, that's definitely important.
You are wonderful. You're a godsend, I'm telling you.
Well, I appreciate that. I hope that I'm making somebody's life easier out there.
Yes, you are. And I don't have an assistant with me. I know some librarians don't have an assistant at all. My assistant is at the opposite school when I'm at the other school.
So we never
see each other. So since she has no classes, I try to relegate some stuff to her to get the pressure off. Like she sets up the book fair at the smaller school, and she takes it down. And, of course, she shelves the books at both schools, most of them. She does most of the cataloging because with my back-to-back classes, I don't have time, really.
I understand that.
Yeah. So, and she scans for inventory at the smaller school, too. So she helps out by doing the smaller school and working very, very intensely with that school as far as all of that. And so, you know, that's how you would work it if you had an assistant that is not with you all the time. But if you don't have an assistant, get your most dependable and reliable students to help you. And I'm telling you, those kids, they take their job seriously. When I have group captains, they take their job seriously. They don't let anybody mess up. They'll tell me immediately if so-and-so is off task, and I get right on them. And my student assistants, I only have two, and they're just excellent. They do everything that I need done, like I'm helping me grade the papers and helping me keep the pencil sharpened because that's a job in itself because there's so much work going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are a godsend also. So just use your reliable students and try to just organize yourself so that you don't get lost in the shuffle or get overwhelmed with all the stuff that's going on.
Right.
Create a lot of forms. I created my, on Teachers Pay Teacher also, I have a lesson plans template. And I worked hard on that because it's very comprehensive. It's got a place for your resources. It's got a place for your URLs. It's got a place for the websites. Your video downloads where you write where they're located. So you can have all that in one place. You can have your Common Core standard that you're focusing on and the activity where you write down in the box what activity you're doing. So that has kept me organized, and I have my lesson plans in a big notebook, so if anybody ever comes in, they say, what are you doing? What are the kids doing? So here's the notebook. Here's the schematic. Here's
exactly
what you're doing.
I think that preparation is key. What has been for me, just having everything together ahead of time and, you know, all aligned to the standards. And I do keep it in a big binder. And so if anybody wants to know at any time what's going on, why are you doing it for, here it is.
That's right.
And so that's
right.
The beauty of having your lesson plans already done.
Yep.
So, okay.
Right.
Well, I appreciate all this information. I think it's been great, and it's a completely different approach to stations than my last podcast that I just have recorded recently. And, you know, those gals, they do an awesome job with stations also, but it's just completely different. And so I like to have the different perspectives so that people can listen to each side and see which one would work better for them, because I think stations in the library is a win for everyone.
Yeah, definitely. Really.
Well, if people have any questions today, Melanie, about things that we've discussed, what is the best way for them to reach you?
Well, they can contact me at my AOL email address. It's activatethenelevate@AOL.com.
Okay. And I will put that into the show notes. So if you're listening to this on the road or, you know, if you're walking around doing some laundry or something, you can go to my show notes after the show and I will have all this information available for you. I'm not sure of the exact podcast number because I've recorded several over this holiday break. And so if you just go to elementarylibrarian.com and click podcast, look for the one that says A Different Approach to Library Centers. So again, Melanie, thank you so much. I appreciate you being on the show and taking your time to tell us about how you do library centers.
Thank you. I hope I did a good enough job explaining it. It's easier to do it than to explain it to someone else, and I wish you were here to see it. And if you ever get a chance to come down to Darlington, South Carolina, anyone, just come on down to Washington Street Elementary or West Hartsville Elementary and say, I want to see your librarian in action. And
yeah,
be able to actually see these stations in action, or just email me and I'll try to do a better job explaining it.
No, I think it was great.
Thank you.
You know, I think there were several things that people can pick up on that they could try immediately in their library. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
I hope y'all enjoyed yet another podcast about library centers. I do love library centers, as I'm sure you know if you have been here very long. I wanted to let you know about the Elementary Librarian Pinterest page. If you have not been there, be sure to check that out. I have lots of cool display ideas, just general library cool stuff that you don't want to miss out on. So just go to elementarylibrarian.com and you can click on my Pinterest button over on the right of any of my blog posts. Also, don't miss out on the Elementary Librarian Facebook page, and I'll also put links to all of these in the show notes. The Elementary Librarian Facebook page has been really active with lots of you guys talking about different ideas and questions that you have about your libraries that other librarians can help you answer, and I really appreciate all the interaction there. I'm also on Twitter, and if you have not used Twitter before, be sure to check out my previous blog post and podcast about using Twitter. It is a very powerful tool. I do get on there occasionally. I'm not as active on Twitter as I am on some of the other social media, but hopefully I will be able to catch you guys on Twitter. I'm now blog posting on every Monday and Thursday. I am trying to post more frequently for you, so definitely check that out. If you are not on the Elementary Librarian email list, you want to make sure that you are on there for all updates. I do send out messages to talk about my new blog post, and I've also been sending out email subscriber only Friday freebies. So it's usually a compilation of resources that I have put together solely for my email subscribers that you can check out every Friday. Finally, I wanted to let you know about an opportunity to win 2014-2015 year-long lesson plans. I am in the process of rewriting all of my lesson plans due to popular demand, and I am doing a survey on those lesson plans. So if you would like to get your opinions out there about what you'd like to see for next year's lessons, just go to elementarylibrarian.com/survey, and the survey will end on February 28th, so you want to make sure that you get your entries in before then. So thank you again for listening to the Elementary Librarian Podcast. I hope that you have a great day.
Listening to the Elementary Librarian Podcast, brought to you by elementarylibrarian.com.